Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 28 of Game On with Cody and John.
On this episode's Big Deal,
motivations.
Gaming to win or gaming for fun? We'll talk about our motivations for being gamers.
And on this episode's Buy, Try, or Deny,
Battlestar Galactica, the Pegasus expansion.
Will this expansion jump you to safety, or will you launch it out of the airlock?
All this and more on Game On with Cody and John.
Well, howdy gamers, it's Game On with Cody and John. I'm John.
And I'm Single L.
And I'm David.
Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all sorts of tabletop gaming, board games, card games, and role-playing games. Coming to you from beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana. And as you may notice, we seem to be down a host this episode. There is no Cody this episode. And that's because Cody is getting married this weekend. And so as we said on last episode...
Poor boy.
I know it's rough. So you're hearing a couple of new voices on the podcast. As we mentioned in the last episode, we're going to be having a couple of guest hosts on the show this week. And so I wanted to introduce them to you. And they're voices that you've heard on the show before in our lunch table segment and then on a couple of other segments. So without further ado, we've got David here.
Hello, hello.
And David's a friend of mine from work. And we've also got...
Single L, about checking about one wow.
As he said earlier. Okay, and so thanks guys so much for joining me on the show this time. And
pleasure.
It is a pleasure to be here.
They're all in. They're in for the full episode here. They're going to help out with all the different segments. They got together with Cody and I last week to play our game for Buy, Try, or Deny. We've got a whole big deal segment planned out. So, hey, you know, even though Cody is gone, and we miss Cody, don't we?
We do.
We do.
We do?
We do.
Yeah, we do.
Okay, and not much confidence from that side of the room.
Yes, but, fan.
Well, we'll talk about that later. But right. Yeah, so we do miss Cody, and of course he'll be back in a couple of weeks after his honeymoon is over with. But the show must go on, and so we've got a great episode for you. In our big deal segment this episode, we're going to be talking about motivations, motivational speaking. We're basically going to be doing a discussion about... why we are gamers. We talk about this being the uncommon podcast for the common gamer. Sitting in this room right now are three common gamers, just sort of casual, common guys.
Common and casual. Yep. That's how I describe myself.
And and all of us have sort of gotten into the gaming hobby just in the last few years. So there's no guys here that have been playing D&D for 30 years or anything like that. And
so I only thought Monopoly existed. That's all.
Single L couldn't have played games for 30 years. He's not even 30.
Not even close, actually.
Yeah. I am 12.
No, you're not. But we're just going to talk about sort of why we became gamers and also just some of the motivations that people have for gaming, whether it's competitiveness or atmosphere. We'll get into all of that. In our Buy, Try, Deny segment, we're going to be talking about the new hotness in game expansions that just came out in Gen Con 2009, Battlestar Galactica, the Pegasus expansion. And that's a good one from Fantasy Flight Games that we just got at Gen Con. It was a limited release. I think at this point, it's available for purchase pretty much everywhere now. But we're going to give you a full review. We had a chance to check it out. So for all of you BSG fans out there, this should be a treat for you.
But even the non-BSG fans.
Perhaps even for the non-BSG.
Maybe so.
Well, you'll just have to wait and see. That's a little radio tease there.
Yeah, that is.
But as always, our episode starts off with a Game On Inbox, which starts...
in due course.
The Game On Inbox.
Send us an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Do it.
Welcome, everyone, to the Game On Inbox. Right now, we're going to hear from our sponsors, Myriad Games.
Yep, as usual, we're going to give a little bit of love to our wonderful sponsor, Myriad Games, at myriadgames.com. As we mentioned in a lot of the previous episodes, Myriad Games is a great, friendly, professional game store, and they would encourage you to visit your friendly, professional game store wherever you may live. And if you don't have a friendly, professional game store, check out myriadgames.com. They also have Myriad Games Presentations, which is a great podcast with Session Impressions, Game Gab, Gamer Angel, a lot of different shows that are talking about different aspects of gaming, talking about new products. Plus, they have a whole lot of stuff of coverage from the summer conventions, Gen Con and Origins. And, well, why don't we just hear a little bit more about Myriad Games?
Greetings from Myriad Games, your friendly professional game store. Myriad Games presentations feature a wide variety of family fun for everyone. Check out our summer convention coverage from Origins and Gen Con, including interviews with publishers, designers, and industry insiders. Myriad Games presentations are available through iTunes and the show links at myriadgames.com. Be sure to leave us a review on iTunes to receive your complimentary pair of Myriad dice and to be entered in drawings for free Myriad gear and $100 of Myriad money. Your feedback is very important to us. Please email us through myriadgames.com with your comments, questions, suggestions, abuse, and general ridicule. For more about a myriad of games, visit your friendly professional game store. And be sure to visit us online at myriadgames.com. Myriad Games. So many games, so little time. So start playing.
So that's a little bit from Myriad Games. Be sure to check them out at myriadgames.com. All right, we're going to move on to our next segment in the Game On Inbox. As always, all you faithful listeners know how these segments work, so you know you can.
We don't.
Well, you've got a piece of paper in front of you. Hopefully, that'll tell you a little bit what's going on.
I can't read.
That's not good. Well, we're going to talk about some games that we've been playing lately. So, David, what have you been playing lately?
I guess the main thing I've been playing a lot lately is I have a 4.5, almost 5-year-old daughter now, and unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to look at it, John introduced me to that Sorry Sliders and said that his kids enjoyed it, and I grew up playing Sorry and just absolutely loved the game back then. And so I purchased Sorry Sliders, and my daughter's got the hang of it, and actually she wins about 80% of the time, and I'm no longer letting her win either. So
you kind of reach that point when you have kids where you start off and you're right. Totally handicapping yourself, and then yeah. You don't tell the kids when you stop handicapping yourself.
Right. Now you can't beat her.
Exactly. Now I can't. Exactly. She's always moving my pawns and stuff for me anyway, but mostly that. Then, of course, we always have our lunch table, occasional games, and yeah. We've been kind of stuck on Magic and the new Magic that we'll talk about more later today, and that's pretty much what my extent's been.
Okay. Now, I mean, you're going to find as we're talking here, I got the two guest hosts here, is that I'm probably a little bit more of a gamer than these guys are as far as, you know, spending a lot more time with games as Lloyd definitely. Sits here and looks around at my expansive
I would never get that idea by looking at the 1,000 games on your game shelf right
yeah,
now.
I wish I got more into the table, but anyway that's one of the reasons why I wanted these guys to be on the show, is that they're just normal common guys who have gaming as a part of their life. It's not their whole life, but you know, it's cool that you're able to play a game that was recommended on the show
definitely
with,
yes,
with your daughter. So that's awesome. I love Sorry Sliders as well. And Single L or Lloyd. You know, that's the big secret, is that your name is actually Lloyd.
My name is Lloyd.
What have you been playing?
Well, as David has been social and playing with real people at the table, I have been playing Magic Online in my first floor of my house in a dark room all alone.
That's scary.
Isn't that scary? But
way to perpetuate that stereotype.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Well done, yeah.
But no,
you don't have a basement, so the first floor is the best.
Yeah,
you can do, right?
The first floor is. I'm going to dig a hole and put a computer down there so I can go down in the basement. Right. But no, I'm just a huge Magic fan, and I bit the bullet and did the Magic Online, started the account.
So now, for folks who haven't played Magic, and you kind of got me into this too.
Yeah,
so
and me as well.
I'm trying hard to get everybody in there.
And Cody too, actually.
Oh,
when he comes back, we'll have to ask him. I think he's playing quite a bit of that too. If you could just tell the listeners what Magic Online is, how is it different from regular Magic the Gathering, and you know, how does the interface work, how does the pricing work? You just kind of go into that a little bit.
Well, and the one thing I think you guys all like about Magic Online as well, something like World of Warcraft that has a monthly fee, Magic Online costs as much as you put into it. So that's also a bad thing in that for a virtual card,
correct,
you're paying $3.99 for a booster pack that doesn't exist.
Right. Only in the
virtual world.
The internet.
So these digital cards cost just as much as the paper. And for somebody like you, John, I know, who likes to collect things,
what would give you that impression?
Not that it's a bad thing. It's you don't have that tangible card in your hand that you can feel.
Right.
So for some people, that's an instant turn off for it. They never want to do it. Mm-hmm. But for me, that I just want to be able to play the game at any time. And so that's sort of how it's different for me, that you know, when I only had the real cards, I had to wait for lunchtime, or I had to wait for a random game night where we could actually play Magic. Whereas now,
you
I can't
have to wait. You wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning, can't sleep.
And there, somebody is always online. Usually, the casual gamers room usually has about 500 people in it at any given time.
Wow.
Because I got on it in the morning. Yeah, in the prime times, it's around 800 to 900. But
and you can do all the stuff you can do at tournaments, at like conventions, sealed decks, booster drafts. You can do all that stuff online.
All of it. They even have two-headed giant. You can go into the multiplayer room and do a two-headed giant for the people that know that format. But I've never did booster drafts because I was too scared really to do it in a actual tournament because the people kind of intimidate you. Oh, yeah. So that's another thing. You don't have – what's kind of bad about it is you don't have that personal interaction with the person because you just see a name on the screen. Mm-hmm. But what kind of helps is the intimidation factor is gone. You don't see these people being very intense about the whole thing. So you're like, oh, a booster draft, I'll enter it. Well, these people are just names on a screen. So you kind of build the experience from it. And then at Gen Con, I did a real booster draft because I'd already done, 5 or 10 of them or 20 or a number I can't admit. But that's one of the great parts about it too. Well, and so you can always do the tournament type style or you can just start up a casual game.
And just the $10 entry fee gets you quite a few cards, right?
Especially now.
Several hundred cards.
More for the newer people. When I first joined, it was $10 entry, and then you use that $10 to buy whatever you wanted online.
Right.
It was kind of a credit.
Yeah, by the time I joined, the $10 actually got me a whole pack full of stuff. I got a bunch of
you get Magic commons and uncommons,
cards. And plus, they even have a separate set of like gold-bordered... They call it
Planeswalker decks or whatever.
Yeah,
I don't.
It seems like it's a bunch of much better cards. But you can only use those in the Planeswalker area.
Yeah.
So, but it's a good way for you to be able to build better decks.
Yep.
Without having to spend a whole lot more money. Right. So.
Yep.
And there's quite a few places you can go and buy individual cards, and they always have trading. Whether it's with the person that you played, or you can just go into the trading rooms and trade the cards that you get from your booster drafts that you don't want, or if you have an idea of a deck that you want to build, that's a great place to go and get them too.
Right. I think for a lot of people, especially like board gamers and even RPGers, the word collectible is like the third rail on the subway train that, they just don't want to touch it because it's a money sink. I mean, it's meant to be.
Right.
That you can put as much into it as you want to. But it is nice that if you do decide to bite the bullet for a small entry fee on Magic Online, then you can build decks and play. They even have like some test or practice decks that you don't even have to buy, and you can still use those or like single color decks. And you can still get some good fun out of those if you're playing with the right people, because there's experienced players online and also a bunch of new players as well. So you can have a lot of fun with that. Now, when I played with Cody a couple of weeks ago, I made my first mistake on Magic Online, which was to
you had a sense of humor.
Always a bad idea, especially with some of these gamers. I challenged Cody. Cody called me and said, "Hey, you want to play Magic Online?" Yeah, sure, no problem. We were in our separate houses, and so I challenged him to a game. And then in the challenge screen, you can put a little comment of what just a comment field of some kind. And so for fun, I put "I pwn all noobs." And, just I thought it would make Cody laugh, right? It probably did.
You lie.
Yeah. Thank you, Joe Wilson. And so it launched into the game. And the one setting you can do is you can have a game allow watchers, which means that you can just sort of kind of jump into a game and watch it being played without actually playing. But when you watch, you also can make comments in the little chat screen that's there about the game. And so we played for a while, and I was doing terrible. It was like 22-7. I was almost dead. And this user online named Vamtrix decided to jump in. It says, "Vamtrix is now watching your game." And then it says, and it kept being like in the third person, "Vamtrix thinks it's very funny that the person who says they pwn all noobs is getting crushed 22-7. Ha 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 ha.
Right.
And so we kind of ignored him for a while, but he just, every move that I would make, he would make some kind of snarky comment about how I played badly or I'm complaining too much or something. And I'm just like, seriously?
And see, that's something you can't imagine happening in a real game. You're playing with your friend Cody at a table, and then some person just comes up next to your table and starts saying these things.
Yeah.
That's something that wouldn't happen in the real world.
Yeah.
John being his 6'7" frame, which stand up and bring an end to it. But,
exactly.
So there's the good and the bad.
I'd beat him over the head with my high school football trophy that I don't have. So anyway, that... But it's a lot of fun, though. So don't let that scare you off. I mean, there's always going to be those types of folks. And
you can get that anywhere.
You can always say that you don't
want to
watch
every night I sit down and basically play a game. But cool. And another nice thing for the new players is since you can't do anything the rules won't let you do, it's a good way to learn the rules to the game.
Especially learning the steps and the phases. That's key to playing Magic well.
Mm-hmm. As far as stuff that I've been playing lately, not a whole lot, because you know Cody's been gone for a little while now, and he's my main gaming buddy.
You've just been in a state of depression.
No, it's been okay. But I have gotten a few games in the mail that are going to be we're going to be talking about on future episodes, so I've been excited to pop those open and look at the rules. So we got a copy of Middle Earth Quest from Fantasy Flight Games. That's one that came out at Gen Con this year. That's set in the Lord of the Rings universe, but it's supposed to be in the time leading up to when Frodo leaves the Shire with the ring. So part of the game is the adventurers going out and trying to help Gandalf find out information about the ring so that he can then go and tell Frodo what to do with the ring. And so lots of adventuring. And so one player plays Sauron. The other players will play the free people. And it's not any of the characters from Lord of the Rings, that they've made up some different, you know, elves and dwarves and that kind of stuff.
Do you get to walk around in the game?
Yeah, you got a miniature that you... I don't get it.
Lord of the Rings involves lots of walking.
Oh, this seems like lots of, they're walking in the marsh. They're walking up the, there's lots of that. And it looks like it's going to be interesting. I haven't read all the rules on it yet, but the components look really nice. So we'll be covering that one definitely in a future episode. And another one that I'm sure we'll be covering is the mighty third edition of Space Hulk that just got released in the last few weeks from Games Workshop.
I can see David looking at the game.
He's looking at the box right now.
Check it out.
And
he looks nice.
Man versus alien
in desperate battle. Yeah, and I, you know, it's a game that came out in first edition back in the mid '80s, and it's set in the Warhammer 40,000 universe, which I'm not really familiar with at all. And I've only really started to get a little bit of familiarity with it from listening to the D6 Generation podcast. Those guys are really into playing 40K, and so they know a lot more about the Warhammer and Warhammer 40K world. But this game has gotten so much buzz on BoardGameGeek and on other sites just over the components, that the game has these great, thick, embossed tiles. The basics of the game is that you have two teams. You have a group of space marines that are, and then a group of these aliens called Gene Stealers that are on this giant derelict spaceship called the Space Hulk. And they're walking around, the Gene Stealers are trying to kill all the Space Marines and vice versa. And there's also missions you can play where you're looking for particular objectives. But the pretty interesting little mechanics for how that's played. The miniatures in this game are have to be assembled. And so they come on plastic sprues that you have to cut off. So if you're a miniatures wargamer, that's going to be, you know, really cool and pretty easy. For board gamers, it might be a little bit more of a challenge, but looks like it might be, much like I've said about Arcane Legions, it looks like it might be a good game to sort of get you into miniatures wargaming, at least the assembly. And you could even paint them if you wanted to. So the game has a hefty price tag of $99 American dollars.
Oh, my goodness.
My wife would not allow me to.
No, well, you can come over and play my copy if you want.
That's why you got John, right?
That's why I have John.
I'm everyone's
supplier. Live vicariously through games with John.
I'm the pusher man. But we'll be putting those miniatures together, and I'm sure Cody and I will have a review of Space Hulk coming up as well. So look forward to that. Kind of getting back on what we were saying about Magic, I know that we've already talked more about Magic the Gathering in one episode than we ever have.
Finally.
Single L's excited about that. But one of the games that we had a chance, a new game that we had a chance to play quite a bit over the last couple of weeks, is the new expansion for Magic the Gathering called Plane Chase, which is
beautiful.
It's a new casual variant, and it really highlights multiplayer play, even though it can be played with two players. And so what we wanted to do was to give you a pretty extensive review of Plane Chase for those of you who are Magic the Gathering players to see if this is something that you might be interested in adding to your repertoire of play. And so this variant of Magic is sold currently it's sold in these packs, which come with an actual 60-card playable deck of tournament-legal deck of Magic cards. And they're pretty decent decks. They're probably better than the average pre-constructed theme deck that
definitely.
You're going to
get. A good amount of rares?
Good stuff. And so four of those have come out. And then with that, you're going to get these 10, are they called planar cards or are they called something else?
Yeah,
planar cards.
For the purpose of this episode, they will be called planar
cards.
Okay,
very good. We can edit that out and put a different name in.
Enter name here.
Planar cards. And these cards are oversized cards. They're about a, what would you say the size of them is? Is they're 5x7 or no, not quite that big probably, but 4x6.
Not quite 5x7, probably 4x6.
Yeah, real big cards. And these are going to represent different planes that you're going to be traveling on. So David, why don't you tell us a little bit about like how those are used in the game, and when you turn over a planar card, what does it do?
Yeah, basically each card has a standing effect that affects everybody, and it's not just for the player whose card that happens to be. So such as some of them are all creatures have +2/+2. There's one of them that says all creatures can be tapped for 2 green mana. So those kinds of things. And then what it does is it comes with a die. It's a 6-sided die. 4 of the sides have nothing on them. One side has the looks like a old broom or old dustpan. That's the planar card or the planar token.
Something along those lines.
Anyway, and so you roll this die, and if it comes up with that, then you move on. You planes walk from that card that you're currently on into the next one, which would be of the player that rolled it.
So there's only going to be one of these cards in play at any time,
Total on the table, correct.
So everybody's going to have their own deck of these planar cards, but only one of them is going to be flipped over, correct. And that applies to everybody.
Yes. Okay. And then the sixth side of the die has what they call...
The best side called
the chaos side.
Chaos.
And each of these cards, in addition to having the standing effect part of the card, there's a chaos effect that happens, and it can be anything like destroy a creature of certain name, all creatures, you know, anything along those lines.
It's a big deal. It's usually a big one.
There's one of them that you throw chaos and you get one of all 5 color mana. So obviously when you play this, it has to be played as a sorcery, so it has to be played during your main phase. So some of these will be played during your first main phase and some will be at your second main phase, just depending on which ability it is and how you plan to use it.
And what does it cost to roll the chaos die?
The first time for each player is free, and then it costs 1 mana for the number of times you've previously rolled. So the second time you roll, it costs 1 mana. Third time you roll, it costs 2 mana. Fourth is 3 mana.
So you can roll as many times as you want, as long as you can pay that incremental cost in mana.
Yes, as long as you have that mana available, then you can continue to roll the die.
You can roll those. You can just roll and roll and roll.
Roll and roll and roll.
And we find in some of those games that actually happens a lot, especially if you're on a plane that you hate. If it's doing bad things and causing you to lose the game, you're going to be spending all your mana sometimes.
Players cannot untap cards.
There's like one called
the fog.
Yeah, none of the cards will untap. But if you roll chaos, you get to untap all your stuff.
Correct.
Or if you roll the planeswalker, then you can get out of there. But
another example is the one that we had today playing our 2-player version is... the standing effect is at your upkeep, you can exchange dice total, life total, with any player. Well, 2 players were bouncing it back and forth, and then the only way to prevent that from happening next person turn is to planeswalk from that card. So we had a couple of times where we rolled a few extra times just trying to get the planeswalk off of it since we just did the trade and we've got the higher life.
Yeah, so it was really cool. David, like, hit me for 14 damage, and so it was like 20-6, and then it came around to me, and I'm like, oh, okay, I'll just switch life with you. Now I have 20 and you have 6.
Exactly.
And so that's kind of the flavor that you're going to get with this. And I'll just kind of explain just the basic mechanics of how it'll work with these cards. Everybody's going to have their own deck of at least 10 of these planar cards. And you'll roll to see who goes first. We've played mostly 4-player games of this. I think they said you can play like 2-6 players.
2-6 is what they're saying.
And it seems to work real well with 2 as well, for those of you who are used to dueling. But whoever wins the roll-off will turn over their top card, and that will be the standing effect for that one. And then basically it'll just go around until and people can roll for that chaos symbol, or if they roll the planeswalker symbol. If you roll the planeswalker symbol and it's your card that's currently face up, then you're just going to take that one, put it on the bottom of your deck, and turn over the next one. If it's another player who rolls that and gets the planeswalker symbol, they'll turn the top card of their deck over and you'll put yours on the bottom there. So these effects will just be coming and going, and it just really has kind of a, well, I'll save my judgment. Lloyd, why don't you tell us, what did you think of this version and what it does to the regular game of Magic?
It was fantastic. I had told you earlier that I thought it was going to be clunky. Mm-hmm. When I first saw it, I was like, oh, this is just going to slow the game down, and people are going to be constantly asking, you know, well, what do I do? And it just went so smooth. I mean, from that first turn, you just turn it over, and it just basically, if you know enchantments in Magic, it just, you instantly see it, you understand it to be an enchantment, the standing ability that's occurring. But the best thing of all, Magic really seems to be pushing this theme right now with the recent rule changes to the flavor. You know, you put the card on the battlefield. You know, they're not saying in play anymore. They really want to make you feel like you are the planeswalker.
Yeah, like every website you see says, you are a planeswalker.
Yeah, and it's like they really want to keep reminding the people, hey guys, you're not just playing a game, you're a planeswalker.
You're not some guy in your basement.
That's right. And I just thought, they keep pushing things, you know, to help the tournaments and everything, but I want to see more stuff like this that helps the casual game. And the planes cards just do a great job of really making you feel like you are a planeswalker, having control of being able to travel to different of the different places in the Magic universe, because lots of the names, you know, will remind you of, oh, well, you know, back in this edition, that was a name of this certain place,
right?
And
right.
So it just kind of brings that back for you, and everything kind of fits, the ability fits with what that place would do. And so the whole time you're just like, oh, this is great. Yeah, that reminds me of these cards. And
yeah, for example, in my deck of cards that I got, there's the Plane of Bant. And I also, in the Shards of Alara block, I got the Bant Exalted theme deck. And the Exalted ability is, if you have a whole bunch of creatures with Exalted, if one of them attacks alone, then that one gets +1/+1 for every Exalted creature that's on the board. So that can make one creature very, very powerful. But if you turn over the Bant plane, then the effect for that is all creatures have Exalted, because you're right in Bant. So that it really seemed very themey and cool as far as that goes. What do you think of the game, David?
Oh, I think it's fantastic. It's definitely a great addition to the game. And one thing that I've always been running into, as Lloyd would contest or would agree with, is that him and I, when we play, oftentimes I'm always outmatched, because Lloyd can definitely build a better deck than I can. And this definitely seems to, I guess, not necessarily neutralize, but put everybody on an even keel. Because you can have a fantastic deck, but, you know, but if you're sitting there basing everything on, you know, having an Exalted, for instance, and then that Bant card comes up, then everybody has it. So you lose that ability that you kind of built your deck into, or built into your deck. And so it definitely makes more of an even keel when you're
playing. Everybody has a chance.
Yeah, everybody has a chance. And when I went to purchase the packs that we had at my local game store, and the kid behind the cash register, I talked to him about it, and he said, yeah, him and his buddy bought a pack of them each, and then they played it the night before, and he says it bounced back and forth. One person was winning, then the other person was winning, and just back and forth. And they agree that it just made the game, I guess, more enjoyable, especially for the casual player. I mean, if you're the hardcore person, I'm here to win, I'm going to build the ultimate deck because I got $500 invested in this deck, you're obviously going to be slightly disappointed, probably to some degree.
Be frustrated because that great deck you put together now isn't going to work quite as well.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, some things can pop up on those planes cards that just really knock you down. And and that's another thing that I think is the main thing why I like it so much, is it kind of puts everybody on an even keel a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that for a casual game, that's really, really important. I think, for me, we've played a lot of games at the lunch table where it's the three of us playing Magic. And, you know, we play multiplayer Magic because you can, you know, but you sort of find out after a while that, you know, one person is being ganged up on, and you kind of, everybody gangs up on that one guy, and then they get them out of there, and then the two remaining will duke it out.
Yeah,
and it just, it works, but it doesn't seem quite as fun. For some reason, just adding in these cards has changed my opinion of multiplayer Magic completely, and has made it a whole lot more fun. And this is where, for any of you board gamers who have not fast-forwarded through this segment yet, because you're not interested in Magic, here is the payoff for you, is I think that this version of Magic is almost a good enough standalone purchase to make this fun and have some replayability.
Oh, certainly replayability.
Exactly. So the plane chase packs, which come with the 60-card deck, the 10 planar cards, and one of those six-sided planar dies, is $20. And you know, if you get two people or three people with all that each have those packs, like David bought all four packs, and we each had one of those, I think that you will have fun with this game. If you've never played Magic the Gathering, I would think that this might get you in the pool.
Definitely.
You know, not to send you down some downward spiral of economic distress from a collectible game, but that I think this could get you into a casual game, and I think this is something that you could add to your collection, even if you're not a hardcore Magic player. Because really, whether you like collectible games or not, Magic the Gathering is a really, really well-designed game.
Very well.
It is one of the, I think, one of the best-designed games that's come out in history. That's a bold statement, I know.
I love their rule book.
I agree. I agree.
Yeah, I mean, any game with like a 160-page rule book. But it's, you know, the barrier to entry isn't really that high, I don't think, to get you in the shallow end of the pool there.
And the pack itself actually comes with a really good direction set yeah, of how to play the game. Oh, yeah. And so it being totally new to it, you could read those directions that come with it and head right on into it.
So if you're looking for, you know, not going down to your game store and playing in the big tournaments, you just want to do something casual, highly recommend you pick up a couple of packs of this with a buddy and give it a try, because I think you will not be disappointed with this new expansion.
Yes.
You guys agree?
I agree.
And you can play with any deck. You don't have to play with the theme decks that come with it. You can put those 10 planar cards
with
any deck, which is how, John, you and I did it this afternoon at lunch.
Yep.
Played our own decks with those cards, and it shuffled everything up again. It made it interesting, even with the decks that we had built and constructed earlier.
So a lot of fun. I think going with our buy, try, or deny review system, I would definitely give it a buy. What about you guys?
This is the first time I'm not going to waver. Usually I say, oh, I'm going to buy, I'm going to try it. I'm going to deny it all at the same time. This is a total buy.
Total buy. For the Magic, the consistent Magic player, to the occasional Magic player, to somebody just, I'm interested in trying it out. I definitely think it's a buy.
Buy it 4 times.
Wow, we're
that's how much you buy.
We're so excited right now. Well, we got quite a few emails in the Game On inbox this episode, and we always do appreciate any feedback that you guys are able to provide us. And any emails, any correspondence, any derision, any ridicule, we welcome it. And you can always reach us at the Game On inbox at gameoninbox@gmail.com. So I just want to read just a few of the emails that we have here, because we got so many good ones. One of our friends of the podcast, Justin, wrote us and said, "Hey guys, thanks for reviewing Livingstone." You might remember that my wife Rachel and I did a review of Livingstone, bonus review in the last episode. He says, "I've been eyeing this for a little while now, so I'm glad to hear it was well received. I had a thought for the two-player treasure chest problem." You might remember that when we reviewed this game, the issue with the treasure chest is that in the game you have to donate money over the course of the game to Queen Victoria. And then at the end of the game, whoever has donated the least amount of money is out of the game. So it kind of keeps you honest and keeps you donating. But in a two-player game, what you do is you roll 4 dice at the end of the game, and whoever has not donated at least that much money is out of the game, which means that in a two-player game, both players can lose.
Oh, jeez.
Which is what happened in our game. So Justin here says he thinks he has a solution to this. So he says that in Cleopatra, which is another game with a similar mechanic, the two-player modification is that whoever is the most corrupt subtracts the difference between their number of corruption and their opponent's corruption from their score. So if I had 8 corruption and you had 5, I would subtract 3 points from my overall score, and then whoever has the most points wins. Seems like you could modify this for Livingstone. Whoever gives the least has to subtract the difference from their score, and then the total wins, with the chest just being a normal tiebreaker. I'd be interested to see how this plays out with two, as my wife is my primary gaming partner also. A fellow mouth breather, Justin. So thank you, Justin. I'm glad that you were able to plunk out this email on your was it typewriter or whatever those things are?
I don't know. The words were too big for me to understand.
I know. We, the simple gamers that we are. But I think that sounds like a really good idea. And Rachel and I haven't had a chance to play Livingstone again since our review. But I showed that to her, and she agreed that might be a really good idea. Otherwise, I think that mechanic with the treasure chest just doesn't make a whole lot of sense with the two players. So, Justin, thank you so much. And Justin also actually, and Cody will probably talk about this when he comes back for the next episode, Cody had an opportunity to game with Justin and his wife. They had come in for the National Drag Racing Championships that are here in Indianapolis. And so they were able to hook up and play some games. I'm sorry I wasn't able to do that. It was on Labor Day and I had some other stuff going on, but sounds like they had a really good time. So hopefully Cody will tell us about that when he comes back. So Lloyd, Singlel, what else have you got as far as email?
Well, I have an email here from Jesse. Do you know if Jesse is a female or male?
Jesse is a male, as far as I know.
Jesse is a male, as far as you know. Yes. That helps me to know how to read the email. Jesse says, first of all, let me congratulate you on a year of the podcast, which David and I were talking about that today, that it's been a year for the podcast.
That's right.
I remember it in its infancy when you were at work going, I have a crazy idea, Lloyd. I'm going to go worldwide with my ideas.
And they were sitting there going, I hope he doesn't do this.
I love listening to you talk. I've been listening since the beginning, and it's one of my favorites. It's my favorite, though.
Oh, thank you, Lloyd.
You're welcome. Going along with your discussion of feedback, positive and negative, I appreciate that you want all kinds of reviews, even if they're less than glowing. I also appreciate that you didn't just completely trash your negative reviewer in the past episode. Yeah. I wonder if he's still listening.
I hope he is, but yeah. Well.
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, since he listened to all of your episodes, he probably still wants to listen, just in case he might all of a sudden end up liking it. I don't know.
Yes, change his mind.
I'm giving no more airtime to that reviewer.
No more airtime. Since you are the uncommon podcast for the common gamer, for all of us common gamers that enjoy the show, I say thank you.
Oh, thank you.
On to the FLGS discussion. If you haven't, you should listen to Eric Burgess's Demise and Rise of the FLGS on Board Game Babylon.
Oh, yeah. Board Game Babylon, another great gaming podcast, one of the first board game podcasts. Yeah. Okay.
There are some very interesting interviews with game store owners, some who are struggling, some who are getting out of the business, and some who are doing well. He followed it up with a series on the Friendly Online Game Store, FOGS, Fogs, called The Ascent and Descent, where he interviews some online companies about their practices and what they think of their effect on the FLGS. It's extremely informative, and I'd recommend it. I think the best thing that the FLGS has going for it is the ability to try out games in the store. Stores that have open copies for you to try out tend to interest me more than stores where you must buy before you play. I think that's something game stores could do more of to bring in more people. Thanks again for the podcast, and congrats on your upcoming nuptials, Cody. Dun-dun-dun. Take care. I added the dun-dun-dun. They didn't.
Okay. Well, Jesse, thank you so much. And we know Jesse has been listening kind of since the beginning. He's also the winner of our contest we had a long time ago, almost a year ago, where he chose the name for our gaming event, the Game On Invitational.
Ah.
Unfortunately, the Game On Invitational has yet to actually occur yet.
And great idea, though.
So in the midst of that email, Lloyd didn't read that, but he says, I'm still waiting for my invitation to the Game On Invitational, which was part of his prize. So, hey, just keep on waiting, Jesse. We will get to it, I promise. So we won't pull your chain for too much longer on that. So thanks very much. The things you had to say about the FLGS, is, especially Eric Burgess's stuff, thank you so much for highlighting the fact that he does more research than we do. but no, that's some great stuff online that you can check out regarding friendly local game stores. So thanks so much for providing that resource. David, you had one as well?
Yes, I have a message from a person named Ryan that sent in, and he's basically talking about his local LGS, his local game store. And he starts the email off by saying, "Great show. This quote from your show just about sums it up for me. I don't think customer service is the focus." And as the three of us said here, I can certainly agree with that, especially with a certain store or two in our local area. His letter continues to say, I live in India and have a similar experience in the past with the LGSs. I feel like every time I decide to purchase a game locally, I walk into a place with unfriendly staff that's just too busy in either their WM, which is probably War Machine, I'm assuming, 40K, yep. Flames of War, MTG, etc., game to even say hello or ask if you need help. When I finally get noticed or ask for assistance, they generally seem to be put off that I've interrupted their game. I consider myself an informed gamer and generally don't need much more than just a welcome to the store or an occasional bit of help to locate a specific game. I spend more time than I care to admit on BGG, so when I do go to LGS, I generally already know what I want to buy.
But you got a lot of acronyms in there, right?
Yeah.
He's a military man. He's used to it.
And I understand all of them.
Yes. His letter continues on, "The only other service an LGS can provide me is a place to game. I've tried this a few times and always met with the same attitude and atmosphere of exclusivity. Hence, I do all my shopping on stores online. If I'm not going to get personal customer service and a welcomed atmosphere, I might as well save 30%.
Now, that is
true.
That is the highlight underscore statement on that email right there. Yeah, I can totally appreciate that if you're not going to get that additional customer service and help from your store, right, why not save 30%?
Exactly. And it gets dropped off to your door, so you don't have to worry about driving your car someplace.
Can't fault them for that.
Yeah. Listen, even if it's a gamer click that they're interested in fostering, hopefully that same click can bring enough money to pay their rent.
Ouch.
Yeah. That's it. I like that statement as well. Burn, burn. He continues on and says, I firmly believe the concern about brick-and-mortar stores dying out can be greatly helped, if not totally solved, but greatly helped by increasing the level of customer service. You need to provide a service that gamers can't get from online retailers. Otherwise, there's no incentive to shop at their local store. People won't spend their hard-earned money at local stores out of pity. At least most of us with money in short supply won't. If you see a veteran gamer treating a new player like crap, kick them out. If your staff spends more time gaming than greeting helping customers, then fire them. Once word spreads that your store is unwelcoming and unfriendly, you might as well start the bankruptcy countdown. Great topic, great show, Ryan.
Yep.
And, you think the government would help the
local game stores? The LGS?
Bailout the game stores?
I don't think so.
Yes, we can.
Probably not. But that's very good points, Ryan, and it's nice to know that, well, it's not nice to know, but it's sad to know that other people experience the same thing. But very good points that hopefully people listening to this will either let their game stores know, or hopefully some game store owners are actually listening and start to make some of those ideas.
And not to put too heavy of a plug on Myriad Games again, but I know that Dan Yerrington at Myriad Games, that all this stuff, I'm sure he's interested in hearing right now, because this is the kind of stuff that he's kind of railing against, and that the paradigm that he's trying to change is the idea of creating friendly professional game stores where it's not just, you know, some guy who just opened up a store, you know, because he likes War Machine, but it's someone who wants to be a professional and help people. So just another, I think this is great feedback just to show that this kind of goes on everywhere. And so Ryan, thank you so much for that email. I know it was kind of a long one there, but I thought you just had some great points there. So we wanted to get that on the air there. So, all right. Well, I think that is it for the Game On Inbox. And we've been talking for like, 9 hours now, right? So let's go ahead and get into our big deal where we're going to be talking about motivations. Sound good?
Yeah, I love it.
Definitely.
Let's do it. The big deal.
As far as deals go, this one's pretty big.
Well, welcome to The Big Deal, where we're going to be talking today about motivations.
Motivations.
And I don't mean like motivational speaking like Tony Robbins or anything
what
like that.
What motivates you?
Or John Maxwell. But we're going to talk a little bit about what motivates you as a gamer, as far as what keeps you in this hobby.
All the pretty ladies.
I'm sure that's what it is. Well, we can pretty much be done now. I think that's the reason why we're all in gaming.
We've answered the
right?
question. It is done.
Good. But seriously, folks, just talk about a little bit about, you know, how we became gamers, and then what keeps us interested in games. And I guess the way I want the sort of direction of this to go is to highlight some things about gamers, such as like the competitive nature or the cooperative nature, and you know, and some of the likes and dislikes that people have. But you know, as three common gamers sitting here, just talking about what got us into gaming and what's keeping us in gaming, and we'll just see where the discussion goes from there. So David, why don't you tell us a little bit about your gamer history, I guess. And
okay.
I know that you've I won't speak for you. You tell me about
tell us what David thinks.
I'll tell you what David thinks.
Yeah, tell me, John, what is it that I truly like?
No, just tell us sort of your history, even back to your childhood as far as games, and then and how you became a gamer now.
Yeah, I guess growing up, the youngest times that I remember playing games is my parents and I, we had a camper at a local, it's a little, not quite local, but at a lake. And we had my aunts and uncles had a camper very close, then family friends and stuff like that. So I guess it kind of all started off then, because we'd all get together, especially on rainy days and you're out camping. There's nothing you can do outside other than sit in your camper and play games. My family is notorious, as my wife would say, about playing card games. A lot of solitaire and a game we called Peanuts, which I don't know if that's truly the name of it or not. But they're more or less competitive type games. It's a solitaire game race. And so I guess for me, some of it is that competitiveness that you get. But as I've played more, especially in this last year with working with you or near you and everything, I'm starting to find that my niche is more the cooperative type games. I like where two or more people get together to try to beat the game itself. I guess my main driving force would probably be the interaction you get between everybody playing the game. You know, and even when my family was doing the card games that we were playing, we were, you know, always making fun, you know, or yelling out, okay, we need a four hearts, because I'm holding the five of hearts and I'm just waiting for the next person to play the four so I can play the five.
Right.
You know, so there's still somewhat competitive, but somewhat still cooperative to some degree. And so I just like the interaction that you usually get. I like a lot of the party games, those types of things that, again, just allow you to interact with everybody and usually have a good time. I'm a fun-loving type person, and I enjoy laughing, and most games cause me to laugh.
And that highlights, I think, an important aspect is social interaction. So that's, I think, one that I think a lot of people would agree with, is that this hobby of board gaming, card gaming, role-playing games, that kind of stuff, is it requires other people. And
right.
And most of the folks that are participating in them, that's one of the big draws, is that you have to sit around at a table or in front of actual people and interact with them while you're doing this game. And I think for a lot of people, I don't want to get too far down this trail, but I know that there's a lot of people involved in gaming that socially are probably not as adept as others, you know? But you still find a lot of socially awkward people in gaming.
Right.
And I think the reason for that is because when you sit someone down and everybody knows the rules of the game, that's immediate common ground.
Right.
And you immediately can... A commonality. Yeah. So you can immediately sit there and, you know, I may not know how to walk up to you and shake your hand and say hello, but I know the rules of the game, and so I can sit in this context with you in a social way.
Right.
And I'm not saying that's you. I'm saying
I would never talk to you if I didn't play games with you.
But I think that's one thing that can draw people in is social interaction. And right. So you said that because of that, you sort of have made a little bit of a switch of enjoying cooperative games more because that social interaction is still there.
Right.
But you don't care so much if you lose or not.
Yeah, I mean, every once in a while, everybody likes to win. I mean, that's always the case. But it's not a driving factor for me, you know, because like even playing a couple of the cooperative games that we have together, you know, we've lost, or the game has won, not us, you know, and we still had so much fun. It was still enjoyable, mm-hmm. you know, and a lot of it's even though we lose, it's like, we're just so close, you know, one or two more things would have happened and we won. You know, and so it makes it a competitive as more of a team than it is just an individual.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I certainly enjoyed that part of gaming. And that's kind of what's got me hooked in with you and all the games that I've purchased just, you know, recently, playing them with you at lunch table or hearing them on your podcast. And so, and it's actually brought, you know, some aspects of my family stuff together, and we're now doing things like the Yahtzee free-for-all, for instance. My family's big into Yahtzee, and now it kind of drizzled out because everybody got tired of, you know, buying the pads of paper, first of all. But now it's an entirely new respawn type of atmosphere in my family, and it's cool. It's been great.
Cool. So social interaction, that's one thing. Now, Single L, what is your gamer background?
My gamer background. Being an only child, I played a lot of video games. Would probably be my first foray into the gaming world. Sort of that kid, you sure, know, just yeah. doing the gaming. But my family, as sort of David, probably an Indiana type thing too, I don't know, but cards, playing euchre, and... I've never had that much of a competitive nature. I'm just that kind of loving person. But when we play card games, with certain people it might get me in trouble because I'll just laugh like crazy. That's what my striving, you know, for event for any sort of game is, just to have that laughter and to have that fun. And, you know, I game with my grandmother playing euchre. I was in one of those fits, and she yelled at me, "Boy, cards aren't meant to be have fun," and all this kind of stuff. Right. So, I'm sorry, Grandma. But
just to pass the time, apparently.
But for me, it's always about the fun of the game. And
for you, the fun is not linked to the competitive part of it.
It is not linked to that at all. The one game where people might think I'm competitive, Magic, I don't really care if I win or not. What I enjoy is seeing the right play made. Uh-huh. I just because the game is, to me, that beautiful that I want to see the right thing played, the right move made. Yeah, and that's what I enjoy. So if I get beat by that, I'm as excited as if I won.
Right. And you know, it's funny because I've played with you before where I haven't played an optimal card, and yes. You've actually said no, you should really do this. And he's not being a jerk. I've been in games where someone
sure. obviously
being
you
a
should
jerk.
Play
you
those,
should have played yeah. this card, but you know, he's actually saying no, I want you to make the optimal move because I want to see
how
the best of yeah. this game yeah. play out. So
yeah.
So that's interesting too. So you have a real appreciation, especially for Magic, the design of the game. Yeah. And that part of that is the thinking aspect
yeah.
of it, right?
And with board games that we've played together, sort of David enjoying the cooperative nature of it. But even if we're all together for a night playing a game, I'm fine if, you know, midway through the game we just stop playing it. You know, we're laughing, having fun, we're doing it, and on to another type of game. Now, for some people, that would drive them absolutely mad. You know,
they
would
be start like, to finish and
yeah,
nothing else
start,
in between.
It's sort of, we'll talk about
Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, is that what that's called? Yeah, BSG. I don't watch the show. I have no idea what it's called. No, I made a little comment during the game that, we could start at this point instead of starting from the beginning, you know, and Cody's kind of like, well, that would totally cheapen the game. And to me, it's like, oh, yeah, I guess. And to me, it doesn't even... That doesn't come up to me. It's like, we could start here, just have as much fun, and that would be that. But.
Right. Yeah, and I think you get a lot of purists when it comes to stuff like that, mm-hmm. as far as mm-hmm. as adherence to the rules.
Yep. Oh, true.
And that, and that's, I think, highlights another reason why some people are interested in games, is because you know, a game is an activity that has this common set of rules. You know, I mentioned that that helps with social interaction, because, you know, everybody knows the rules and you can participate in this activity. But I think that people who have a sense of fairness and of justice, I think games really resonate with them. I know my son, who's 6, he has a very profound sense of justice and fairness.
He is a superhero.
He is. But he very much is about right and wrong and what's fair. And so, you know, when we're playing a game, he's not going to try to do some kind of crazy move. He wants to know what the right move to make is. He wants to follow those rules. And so I think that really kind of resonates with him. And he gets fun out of that, because he knows these are the right rules to follow, and he knows what the rules are. And so I think a lot of people like that. I think Cody's like that to a certain extent. Although I would say, and I'm not going to speak for Cody too much in here, I do miss him though. he very much is about, if you want to house rule something, mm-hmm. as long as everybody's agreed upon it
beforehand,
then it's fine. So, so an appreciation for game design, social interaction. And then we've all used the word fun. But I think there's a lot of different definitions of fun, definitely, depending on the person.
And when certain people have fun.
Right.
What is fun? Yeah.
And so for some people, I think that the fun aspect of a game is derived purely from winning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that if they're winning, then it's fun. And if they lose, then it's not fun. And I've never been that person. And I'm kind of like you, Lloyd. I grew up playing cards. Our game was Rummy. Mm-hmm. Played a lot of that with my grandparents. And I don't even remember if I won or lost. I was happy when, you know, you're always happy when you win.
Certainly.
But it was more about just sitting and talking, and, you know, like you were saying, it's almost like the activity is sort of in the background, mm-hmm. you know, of what you're doing. It's more about the social interaction. And so when I got into sort of more of these hobby style games, I think it had more for me to do with just the fact that, oh my gosh, all these games that I've been playing for so long that have gotten a little bit stale. Boy, they're still making games. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like, you know, it's like people who still listen to, you know, classical music. Nothing wrong with classical music, but they did make more music after that, you know?
And they still make new classical music,
exactly,
too.
So it's not like, you know, you have to always be playing those games from the 1930s. There's a whole new renaissance of games that have happened in the last few years. You can always get something new. And part of my enjoyment of games is being able to crack open the box, set up all the pieces. This is going to make me sound like a big dork, but set up all the pieces, break out those rules, and even play some solo turns, and just to kind of process in my head how the game is designed. Because I suck at game design. I mean, I've barely even tried it, but every game I ever think of always turns up with a variant of, you know, roll and move, shoots and ladders, you know? So I don't have any skills as far as that goes. So I have such an appreciation for the way these professional game designers design things. And so that's part of it for me. A part of it's also the components in the games. I just love little cool bits to play with, and you know, colorful cardboard things, and that's kind of weird, but
just like War Machine.
Yeah, oh yeah, you know, and the miniatures games even more so.
You've been having a blast put those together. You got me hooked on that one as well. So
yeah. So what happens, though, when you get into a gaming situation with someone who has a different definition of fun than what you have?
You cause tension. Appears to cause tension.
Mm-hmm. I just stare at them very awkwardly the whole
time.
Yeah,
you do get quiet when...
Yeah, well, and that's the odd thing, right? Because, you know...
It takes the fun away
in the normal gaming situation, you can't get me to shut up. I just keep going. I'm talking, and I can notice when people are kind of looking at their hands, or, all right, well, let's get to the next turn. I'm like, oh, yeah, we have this game in front of us. We should get back to playing. But, And for me, like going to the here we go back to Magic, going to different Magic tournaments, you run into those people.
Certainly.
And different types of tournaments, you run into people that are there. Hey, this is my first tournament. I'm here to have fun, just have the experience. And then you run into the people that are, why would you even attempt to come here or play if you're not going to win?
Yeah.
And so you'll get in a game with that type of person, and you kind of go through the motions. You play the game, because every time I sit down, what's your name? How are you? What's going on?
Right.
And from that instant, you can pretty much tell the type of person you're gaming
right.
with.
And yeah. you can tell the whole experience you're going to have.
Yeah. And the great times are when you're with the person that's, oh, yeah, you know, I've been playing, you know, for a couple of years. Just enjoy coming here and getting together with friends to play. And you go back and forth and have fun. But then there's the very awkward times. And then I find myself losing most of those games because then I've lost all interest.
Right.
It's like, let's just play this and get this game over, no matter what the game is. Let's just... Gen Con. If you remember the guy that told me to read the rule book for directions on Race of the Galaxy, Race for the Galaxy.
What? Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's one of those instances where I totally, and you probably felt it next, I was totally out of that gaming experience.
Sure,
yeah. I wanted to sit down, it's a new game, have fun. If we don't know all the rules to it, kind of agree upon, this is how we're going to advance the game. Sure. You know, there's lots of games here, let's play them, we're just here to have fun. This one man was not there just to have fun.
Right, and yeah, to elaborate on that, we were at the, this was actually at the Spielathon.
Oh yeah, our great friends from the Spiel.
Right, for Steven and Dave from the Spiel, they put this on. This was at Gen Con 2008, so this was a year ago. And we went to that, and there was Open Gaming, and they had a copy of Race for the Galaxy, which is a really cool card game that I'd never played before, and neither had Lloyd. Mm-hmm. And so we sat down, and this guy was saying, "Do you want to play?" Sure, yeah, no problem. And he literally flew through the rules explanation, and you could just tell he had this kind of arrogance about him, I thought, you know. And so he was just going so fast. He wasn't really interested in really teaching us the game or helping us to have an appreciation or a love for the game. He wanted to win.
Win, yeah.
You know, and so he just, you know, told us as little as he possibly could, and you know, and then gave Lloyd the rule book. Oh, you know, if you could you look that up for me? You know, and it's like
to which I threw the rule book away.
and then we got to playing the game, and yeah, I mean, I kind of slogged through it and everything, but it wasn't that much fun for me. And did he win? I don't even remember. I mean, who cares? But
yeah, I think there was a quiet guy there that won. Yeah.
But I mean, one of the reasons why Cody and I do this podcast is that we want to take our love and appreciation for games and share it with other people, you know, so that when I go through a long review of a game, I'm doing it because I want the people who are listening to the show to appreciate that and to understand it more and to learn it and to, you know, and to give them a jumping off point where they can go either try the game or buy it. You know, and so if someone comes up to me and says, you know, I learned how to play this game or I bought this game because of something that you said, then that's great. That's great for me, you know, but, and if I were to sit down and play that game with someone who had bought it because of listening to the show and they whipped my butt, I would still be very happy. You know, I'm always going to play to win. I'm not going to play to lose. That's kind of a stupid way to play, but I just don't care that much.
Yeah,
if you
play to win, but you don't play only to win.
Right. Right. And that's I think that's where, David, when you're talking about cooperative games, that's where I think that makes it a lot easier. You know,
oh, certainly.
Everybody's playing to win, but as long as you're playing to win a little bit, you know, everyone else can sort of make up your, you know, excitement level for you.
Right.
And, you know, you're all working towards kind of a common goal and, you know, you have victory together or you fall together and it's a little bit better, I think.
And that's the one thing I've liked about role-playing games. We'll talk about role-playing games for Cody and memory of Cody.
You hear that, Cody?
But I've been a part of two role-playing game experiences. The Hollowed Earth Expedition. Was that both of them? Hollowed Earth?
No, the first one was Hollow Earth Expedition, and then the most recent one was Deadlands. Reloaded.
Deadlands, that's mm-hmm. right.
Which is in the Savage World system.
And even though RPGs aren't exactly my thing, more based upon the fact that it's you're doing that one thing for a very extended amount of time.
Yeah.
I kind of like to, my game night, I like to have a couple different games, you sure. know, throughout the night. But the one thing I do like is that you're all kind of working together, and you're at least in the games I played, you're going to kind of win. You know, their game master's kind of leading you to get to the end, to work together to solve this puzzle,
right.
or to get, you know, beat the big bad tree. As was our game.
Right.
But and so that's the one thing I kind of liked about the experience was there wasn't this huge competitive nature. It was just about enjoying your time together to go through this story.
Right. Yeah, and that collaborative storytelling aspect I think is key in role-playing games these days. In older school like Dungeons and Dragons, it really was kind of more mm-hmm. the DM versus the
right.
rest of the players.
Yes.
And if you play a board game like Descent, it is the Overlord versus the rest of the players, yeah. But I guess one nice thing is that in all the games we're talking about here, role-playing games and different kinds of board games, there's a lot of variety there. I mean, mm-hmm. there's if your motivation for gaming is that you want to win, Well, there's lots of real competitive games that you can get out there. If you want to just have social interaction, there's everything from party games to cooperative games, lighter games, things like that. You know, if you like intricate rules, then there's plenty of heavy Euro games and things like that you can play. If you like theme, it's a great hobby, you know, and we're always trying to talk up the greatness of the gaming hobby and that there's something out there for everybody. So I think, you know, just one thing to kind of keep in mind as we sort of wrap up the discussion is just that if you have a particular motivation that makes you want to continue in the gaming hobby and it's in conflict with someone else's, you know, like if all you want to do is win your game, you know, and that's going to determine whether you have a good game night or not is how many games you win. And you're playing with someone who just wants the social experience. Don't be a jerk, you know. Don't do things to ruin the experience for somebody else, you know. Right. Because I don't think there's too many situations where being a jerk is going to, you know, is going to play out nicely. It's going to build relationships, right?
Right. You know? So I guess one way to sum it all up is, you know, is what's fun for a person can be different from person to person, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, and the main thing you want to just make sure that you do is you want to have fun yourself, but try not to take away from somebody else's fun. In any game, any situation, any type that you'd have, that you're playing.
Yeah. You know, I'll bet you there's, under the current of all this discussion, we all have these, we have stories in our mind, don't we? You have stories in your mind. Mm-hmm. We're not even telling, you know. But you know, if you think back to the game on Inbox, I told the story about Vamtrix in the Magic Online game. I mean, it's a good example of someone who who had apparently a different definition of fun than I did for the game. But anyway, so, you know, we always want to end our discussion with and kick it back to you, the listener. So, you know, we've told you a little bit about our motivations for gaming, what's fun for us, what's gotten us into the hobby. Of course, we'll pick Cody's brain when he comes back and ask him about that too. But we're definitely interested in what your motivations are. What got you into gaming? What has kept you in gaming? And so we'd invite you to send your feedback and your discussion points and anything that you have to the Game On Inbox. And that is, the address for that is?
Well, that address is gameoninbox@gmail.com, John.
All right. Thanks a lot, Lloyd.
Woo!
So with that, we're going to close out our big deal segment and head on into Buy, Try, Deny, where we're going to be talking about the new hotness in game expansions, Battlestar Galactica, the Pegasus expansion.
Get me off New Caprica!
So say we all.
Buy, Try, or Deny.
Game reviews for the common gamer.
It's that simple.
So in this episode of Buy, Try, or Deny, we're doing Battlestar Galactica, the Pegasus expansion.
So this review is going to be over just the Pegasus expansion to Battlestar Galactica. If you're interested in a review of the full Battlestar Galactica, the board game, I would advise you to go check out episode 1 of Game On with Cody and John, where we did a full review of that great game. But this expansion just came out at Gen Con this year in 2009, and we wanted to do a review of just the expansion so that those of you who have played the game, which I'm sure a lot of you have because it's become a very, very popular game over the last year, to see if the expansion is something that you might want to check out. And so we're just going to kind of go over the highlights of what the expansion includes and what the differences are and the additions that you can make to the game. So the assumption is going to be made that you know the more or less basic rules to Battlestar Galactica. So there's your disclaimer there at the beginning, right? Sound good?
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Okay. So this expansion was released this year in 2009, and the original board game for Battlestar Galactica was designed by Corey Konietzka at Fantasy Flight Games. The expansion was designed and developed by Corey Konietzka, Daniel Levitt Clark, and Tim Uren, and it retails for about $40. So I'm sure you can find it online for a little bit less, but we would encourage you to check out your friendly professional game store and pick up this copy. Let me just go over some of the differences and components that you're going to get. You're going to get some additional stuff in the game, and mostly in the form of cards and boards and things like that. And so the game is going to come with 7 new characters in the game. So you're going to get cards for each of those new characters, and I'll kind of go over those in just a minute. You're going to get 82 large cards that you're going to be adding to the game. And so these are things like crisis cards, loyalty cards, quorum cards, super crisis cards. These are all cards that are used in the base game. You'll get some additional ones to add. Then you're also going to get some cards called New Caprica Crisis cards that are going to be used during the New Caprica part of the game. Go over that in just a little bit. You're also going to get some agenda cards, and that's going to come into play when you use the Cylon leaders, which we'll talk about that in a second as well. You're also going to get a whole bunch of these small cards. One of the hallmarks of this game is that you have all those little tiny skill cards.
Not built for my fat hands, I'll tell you that.
They are pretty tiny. And you're going to get a whole bunch more of those. Some of the cards in the game are actually, the original game, are going to be replaced by the new cards. And then you're also going to add some cards. You actually are also adding a new card type in this game called the Treachery cards. And these are orange card for that Treachery skill type. So that's an interesting little addition to the game. So you're going to get a whole bunch of cards. And you're also going to get two boards, small boards that are going to be laid next to the main board in the game. So you'll have a board for the Battlestar Pegasus, and also a board for the New Caprica location, which is only going to be used towards the end of the game. So the main thing that this thematically that this game is adding is the Battlestar Pegasus, which is an additional Battlestar, if you've watched the show, that kind of appears on the scene midway through the show. And a lot of interesting things happen plot-wise with that. But and that ship is commanded by Admiral Helena Kane. And so that's going to be one of the characters that you're going to get. You're going to get four characters... normal characters to add to your list there of things that you can choose from. You're going to get Helena Kane from the Pegasus, Ellen Tai, Anastasia or D. Dwala, and then Kat Katrain.
Oh, best character.
She's on the stems there. So you get those four characters, and then in addition to that, you're going to get three of the Cylon leader characters. And this is a completely new character type. This is the first time that you're going to be able to start the game out known to everybody as a Cylon. But that doesn't necessarily mean that your motives are known, and that's one of the interesting things
about
the game.
How bad of a Cylon are you?
Yeah, because, you know, if you've watched the show, and I don't want to spoil the show if you guys haven't seen it, but as the show progresses, it starts to become a little bit more of a hazy line between whether the Cylons are actually good guys or bad guys. I mean,
in some cases.
The original game, I think it kind of goes along the lines of the first part of the show where all the Cylons are pretty much bad guys that you're trying to kill.
Right.
Whereas it's a little bit hazier in this expansion. And I think it's a really kind of a cool thematic thing. The other thing, component-wise, that you're going to get, in the original game, the Cylon base stars are represented by these two-dimensional cardboard tokens. And they were okay. But, you know, you got a whole bunch of plastic ships with the game for your Raiders and your Vipers and your Raptors and all that kind of stuff. But you got these cardboard things for your base stars. And so this expansion comes with two three-dimensional plastic base stars. And
pretty
these
cool.
things are pretty awesome.
They are awesome.
And so those
hard to put together. Very technical.
You got to snap them together. It's really hard for the simple gamer like those that listen to Game On with Cody and John. It's a challenge.
My mouth breathing got in the way.
Exactly. Yeah, get your asthma inhaler out there and you'll be all right. So those are going to replace the two cardboard ones that are in the original game. And they look really cool. So that's the components that you're going to get and all that for $40. I think it's pretty good value for all the stuff that you're getting there. So as far as the differences in the game, it's kind of a modular expansion in that you don't have to add all of the stuff in you're not going to just make this wholesale change to the way the game's played. You can do it in pieces or you can add all of it, whatever you'd like to do. So the first new thing that you're going to get are these new characters. So the regular characters, the four that I mentioned, you can just kind of put those into the pile of cards that are being selected. They're going to have their own special abilities and some different things. One interesting thing of note is that that Ellen Tai's character will draw some of those treachery cards, and that's another interesting little mechanic. But she'll be one of the only characters, normal human characters starting out, that will be able to draw those treachery cards. You're also going to have these Cylon leaders cards. Now, the way the Cylon leaders thing is going to work is that at the beginning of a game, and this has to be in a 4, 5, or 6 player game. The game can play with three, but they advise you don't use a Cylon leader when you're playing
with
three.
Pretty tough.
Yeah. You're already at a disadvantage with four, but that one player can choose to be a Cylon leader. And you have three to choose from. You have Brother Cavil, Leoben Kanoi, and Caprica 6. So you can actually start out the game playing one of these characters. And then the character cards look very similar to the regular character cards. You're going to have some special abilities and actions that you can do. You'll have a set of cards that you can take and different card types, although each of the Cylon characters are going to always have the option of drawing treachery cards. So, you know, you'll just have that card in front of you. In addition to that, at the beginning of the game, if you decide to be a Cylon leader, you're going to get one of these agenda cards. And there's two piles of agenda cards. One if you're playing a 4 or 6 player game, and then a different pile if you're playing a 5 player game. I haven't really culled through all the differences between these cards as to why they did that, but I'm sure it's a game balance thing of some sort. But this is the kind of the interesting wrinkle about the Cylon leaders is the fact that you're going to get one of these agenda cards, and it'll tell you sort of the direction that you're going to need to be going to either help or hurt the humans. This is kept secret at all times. It's never revealed until the very end of the game. And so they can be positive or negative things as regarding the human victory. So, for example, in the 4 to 6 player deck here, you might have something like convert the infidels, and your agenda is you win the game if the humans have won and all resources are at 3 or lower. So that's kind of a challenge.
Yes,
to actually win and still have those resources so low. So you're going to be trying to do things that, you know, to possibly cause the humans to lose resources, but you still want them to win. So right. It's an interesting and more complex agenda. They say a couple of times in the rule book that the Cylon leader should definitely be played by someone who is familiar with the game and who's sort of an advanced player.
Definitely agree.
So another example would be the illusion of hope. You win the game if the Cylons have won and 6 or more units of distance have been traveled. So it's like you're kind of this rogue character where you can either work with the Cylon players once they've been revealed, work with the human players, work with both, and at the end of the thing, you really have your own victory condition. Yeah, and so you're trying to fulfill that. So we played a 4-player game of this, and actually, even though Cody has gone to go do his wedding stuff, he was able to play this game with us, and so he was the Cylon leader, as we knew he would be.
Of course, we knew that.
What else was he going to pick? And and you know, and so I'll get his commentary. I think on the Cylon leader was that it's a pretty interesting mechanic, and it definitely adds a lot of depth to the game. But that it's maybe not quite as satisfying as playing a hidden Cylon. Now, one thing that the Cylon leaders can do is that they can either be acting as a full-on Cylon, like a known Cylon, in which case they will only be on those Cylon locations on the board. Oh, and one thing I forgot to mention is that you will actually get a little board that's an overlay to put on top of the Cylon locations on the main board. And that'll give you some slightly new abilities and new text on in actions and stuff for those. So if you're a Cylon leader and you decide to be a Cylon, then you're going to just be on those Cylon locations. But you can choose during the game to infiltrate the humans, in which case you'll move to the human to the Battlestar Galactica, and you basically will act as a human. And so, you know, everyone at the table, all the players at the table, know that you're a Cylon. but as far as your characters in the game, they have to treat this Cylon as though that they were human. And because you just don't know what this person's motives are. They could be positive or they could be right. Negative. It's just really hard to tell. That adds an interesting wrinkle to the game.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to play that. Basically, you just kind of dream like, well, they're human. We'll just kind of go with them and hope, you know, they're not meaning us too much harm.
Right.
Yeah.
Trying to keep them somewhat in check, yeah. But more or less, yeah, especially as they're acting as a human, we kind of let them do what he wanted to do.
Right. Yeah. Because as long as he was helping, you were like, right. Well, I'll just let him keep helping us. Right. But, you know, but when he started, you know, if you were to have started, because I think his win condition, Cody's win condition was that the humans were supposed to win.
Then
there was some other thing too. But so he was actually trying to help, and of course he was hamming it up, saying, you know, I'm a Cylon who's sympathetic to the humans.
I'm a hippie Cylon.
Yeah, he did a great job. But so the Cylon leader really adds an interesting a wrinkle to the game. You don't have to play with the Cylon leader, and so that's just an option that you can play with in the 4 or more player game. But that's something that you can add. You also have the Pegasus board itself, which represents the Battlestar Pegasus, and that board is going to have 4 locations on it that you can use. You treat this board sort of the same way that you would treat the Colonial One ship, in that if you want to move from the Battlestar Galactica to the Pegasus, then you have to discard 1 skill card to be able to move between the 2 ships. And some of the locations on there on the Pegasus include Pegasus CIC, which the action will allow you to try to damage a base star, but because it's the Pegasus and because Helena Kane's a little crazy, if you roll a 1 through 3, it actually will damage the Pegasus. If you roll a 4 through 6, it'll damage the base star. 7 through 8 will damage the base star twice. So it's a little bit more risky. There's a couple other locations too, but the main one is, and the main new thing that you can do on the Pegasus is that there is the airlock location.
Dun, dun, dun.
In the base game, thank you, very nicely done. In the base game, the worst that you could do if you thought that someone was a Cylon is throw them in the brig, which pretty much tied their hands and allowed them to not be able to contribute very much. So it would sort of force their hand. If they were a Cylon, they were likely to reveal themselves and move to the resurrection ship and do Cylon things after that. But with the airlock, you can actually go there. It's a level 12 skill check, and you can actually execute a player. Or execute a character. And if that character gets executed and it's a Cylon, then of course they go to the Cylon location. If that player gets executed and they were a human, then the player actually has to select another character, and the humans lose morale and population and all
that. We only executed humans in our games, didn't we?
Yeah, we never got it right. Never got it right.
No, so there's some danger in that. But, you know, and so you could actually, if you already have the person in the brig, then that it'll actually reduce the skill check difficulty by 4, so it only becomes a level 8. So if you really think you've got a Cylon, you can you can probably execute him pretty quickly. So I mean, I think that thematically works really well with, you know, the way that all that paranoia was in the show, where, you know, they're throwing people out the airlock thinking that they were Cylons, and sometimes they were right and sometimes they weren't. So that's the Battlestar Pegasus. That board will just kind of sit there. So as I mentioned before, you're also going to have this additional kind of card, the Treachery skill card, which is an orange card. And there's different ways you can pick those up. Of course, some of the skill cards will allow you to draw cards of any type, and so you might choose to draw a treachery card. So these cards, if they're being played by like the human players, you can't use the action that's on those treachery cards. And the actions will do, you know, bad things, of course. And so if you're a human, even if you're a Cylon who is unrevealed, who's still pretending to be human, you can't use the treachery cards for their actions. They can only be used in skill checks. And they count negatively towards skill checks. So this is a way that you can throw in to the skills and, you know, and hopefully thwart the skill check. Now, one mechanic that they've added in this game that I think is really interesting is something called the Reckless skill check. And so a lot of the skill cards that have been thrown in there now have this ability called Reckless on them. And what that does is, usually that a reckless card is played before any of the skill cards are played, and you'll throw that out and say, I'm making this a reckless skill check. And so if you're able to pass the reckless skill check, then really good things will happen. I mean, it's supposed to sort of give you an incentive, but right. The problem is that if something is reckless, then Cylons that are hidden can play treachery cards, and if those cards are revealed, then the action that's on those cards is going to fire. It's going to take effect. And so there's a risk there that if you want to make it reckless, then it's going to make it maybe an easier skill check or give you better benefits at the end. But if someone tries to throw in a treachery card, well, you could be totally screwed because, you know, now they've played a card that's going to cause, you know, 4 base stars to show up and kill you.
Because that happened in our game, right?
Yeah.
See, you explain those rules now. I'm listening to you. I totally get what happened now.
Everything makes sense.
I kind of left the game there towards the end when we were playing. I was tired.
We were playing pretty late into the evening there.
I get up early. I'm an old man.
So those treachery cards are interesting in being able to... The unrevealed Cylons are able to use those to their advantage to kind of thwart skill checks. But, you know, also if that reckless option comes up, they can really mess with things as well. So that's kind of a neat one. It doesn't get used that often, I don't think, because there aren't too many characters that use the treachery cards. And we had, you know, Cody playing Brother Cavill, the good Cylon who was helping humans. So he never drew treachery cards. And he kept saying that too. As you notice, I didn't draw a treachery card. yeah, we got it.
And there's a couple of action cards too. I forget which one it's in that makes treachery cards as a positive too.
So, oh, okay.
So if you know you got a hidden Cylon that keeps, you know, throwing that monkey wrench in the works, you know, and you've got that action card, and it's your turn, you can play that action card and allow that treachery point to be positive instead of negative.
So you can thwart the treachery there, yeah.
You can.
And so that's another interesting part to the game as well. And so, you know, that's going to be added in. The Pegasus board is going to be added in. Possibly the Cylon Leaders card is going to be added in. And then the last thing that you can choose to throw into the end of the game is a completely new end game called the New Caprica board. And so, you know, in the television show, again, spoiler alert here. If you haven't watched any of the show, then, you know, I apologize in advance.
That, Cylons win.
is that they're looking for Earth, and they eventually find this planet, New Caprica, and they go to colonize the planet, and they're trying to live in harmony with the Cylons that are there, and it ends up just being a real mess, and the Cylon occupation, and they end up escaping at the end. The Battlestar Galactica comes in and basically rescues all of them and leaves the Cylons there, and they take off. So there, I just ruined the show for you.
That's only, what, season three, right?
Right. in the base game, the goal of the game for the humans is to jump a total of 8 distance points and then to make one final jump to Kobol. And so it sort of ends at that part of the television show. So now you have an option of, instead of doing that, you can add this New Caprica board, in which case you'll need to jump 7 distance, and then you will go to New Caprica. And so pretty much everybody offloads from the Battlestar Galactica and the Pegasus and everything and goes to New Caprica, and it's supposed to represent you trying to live your lives on New Caprica. All of the civilian ships, and this becomes a real important part, all of those civilian ship tokens that sometimes come onto the board, anyone's that haven't been destroyed are going to go onto a space called locked civilian ships. And the idea is that over time, you continue to play out going to locations, playing crisis cards and resolving them and things like that. And the little icon on there that says that you're supposed to jump the ship or advance the jump track, you're going to continue to advance you're going to start at the leftmost side and continue to advance the jump track. The idea being that once you get through one cycle of that and you get to the auto jump phase, the Battlestar Galactica returns to New Caprica to bring everybody back and to rescue everybody. And so once that happens and the ship comes back, then you have the option of going back and forth to the ship. And the idea being that you're trying to evacuate people and evacuate the ships and the civilians off of New Caprica before you jump away. And so this becomes a bit of a race at the end here, because you have all these locked civilian ships. And in order for them to be ready to be evacuated, you have to prepare them for launch. And so there's another little space next to locked civilian ships that says prepared civilian ships. So on your turn, you can go to the shipyard location and prepare a ship. So you'll move the token from one spot to the next. And then once the Battlestar Galactica returns, you can go to that space to evacuate a ship. And you actually will send that ship up into the space area next to the Battlestar Galactica. And so while this is all happening, once the Galactica comes back, all the Cylons start attacking too, and you get Base Stars and Vipers. I mean, it's very themey as far as lining up with the way the TV show goes. So now you're trying to evacuate all these ships, but they're being attacked by all the Raiders and Base Stars that are around the ship, and so you just have a lot of different options. It's very chaotic, and this part of the game will end when the Admiral decides to leave. And it's the Admiral that's going to make the decision that we're out of here. At that point, once the Admiral ends the game and jumps the ship, then all of the locked and prepared civilian ships that didn't get off New Caprica are destroyed. And so you'll turn those over, and anything that's lost, you know, you'll dial your dials down to suffer those losses. So this becomes a real bad thing if you can get to the very end of the game and your Admiral is a Cylon and is unrevealed. They're pretty much going to hose you.
Right.
But in our game, it ended up being the Admiral was a human, and they had several humans trying to decide and sort of weigh out, well, if we leave now, you know, will we still possibly win the game? Because if you leave New Caprica and jump and suffer all your losses and you still have all of your dials not to zero, you win the game. So it becomes sort of a calculated risk as to, you know, whether you're going to actually do it or not.
I, as the brave Admiral, stayed on New Caprica and told the ship to launch without me. And we still all died.
It was, like most games of Battlestar Galactica, a victory for the Cylons.
A real downer, man.
Yeah. So that's all the kind of stuff. I mean, I've missed some of the little picky rules, but that sort of gives you the overall flavor of this sort of modular design for an expansion where there's lots of different things that are added. So I'll just kind of throw it to Lloyd and to David. You know, what did you guys think? Now, you guys have all played, you'd all played Battlestar Galactica before.
Yes, in the original game. Yes, we have.
And what did you think of the expansion as an addition to this game? Do you think it was again, I'm not going to put words in your mouth. Tell me what you think.
Do you want us to say, you know, how we felt about the first one as far as like buy try.
Oh yeah, good point. Because if you guys hated the first game, then it'd be kind of different for your
moot point.
Yeah. So for me, I gave Battlestar Galactica the board game a buy. And when you guys played, what would you give that game a rating?
Mine was a try.
Okay.
I gave mine a try if you weren't sure you knew people or had people that would be willing to play it. It's definitely a game that gets better the more times you play it because you're not rereading the rules and you know you can kind of try to figure out some strategies together. But if you do have a group of three or four or five others that would be willing to play it with a consistent basis, then I actually give it a buy then.
Okay.
So mine's kind of a conditional buy or try, but at least a try.
Yeah. And we've already said previously in the show that I haven't watched the show.
Right.
So there's a little bit of that I lose because, oh, well, this matches with this.
Right.
But just being a sci-fi fan in general and overall, you know, happy nerd, I enjoy the theme of the game.
Right. And David, you have seen all of the show, right?
I've seen all the show, and I, yeah.
Okay, so that's a good perspective. So now, so having given it a try, Lloyd, and a try, I guess a try plus, that would be probably where we put that. What did you think of the expansion in relation to the base game?
I thought the expansion made the game more exciting. For me,
definitely more exciting. Yes,
I feel bad saying it, but I almost with the original base game got kind of bored. Mm-hmm. It just seemed you're just doing the same kind of actions over and over again. Okay, let's get to the point where we can jump. You did your final jump and woohoo, there you go. Whereas this with the new Caprica part of it, it just makes it very thrilling. I think at the end of the game, it just adds a lot of intensity to it. And like you said, it feels like a race.
Right.
You're just feeling like, oh man, we got to get to this point. And so I really enjoyed what it added to the game, especially the end game.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I have to agree. It gave a whole new perspective to it. I think it makes the game possibly a little harder to win.
If it needed that.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of discussed this a little bit over dinner before we started the podcast, but I think it does make it a little bit harder, at least a little more challenging. Again, you can jump whenever you want, and then you just have to tally up your losses from the destroyed ships to see where you fall out.
But. Yeah, because we were saying we had played a short game of this.
Correct.
Where oh, right. I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, it was getting late in the night, and David and I, we wake up very early, and so we were already getting tired. And
almost kind of like a simulated acceleration of the game because I think we had jumped three or four distance, maybe three.
Somewhere
we got about halfway there.
And we got a feel of how the new Pegasus ship was.
The Pegasus ship and the treachery cards, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we got a feel of how those things work. So we thought, well, let's go to the end game.
Right, so we went ahead and just pretended like we already had gotten seven distance. Now, what we actually gave ourselves is an advantage because in a real game, our dials probably would have dialed down quite a bit
less,
more before we got to that point. And we still lost.
We still lost the game. That's what. Yeah, it's so definitely harder, I think.
Yeah.
Right. So I agree. I think it does. I think it's a really great expansion. I love the way the theme is thrown in there. Especially for me, the new Caprica thing. I think it might come across as clunky, especially to people who've never seen the show. But if you've seen the show, it really does feel like
sense. Yeah.
And when the Galactica returns, which is probably the coolest scene in the entire show.
Yeah.
It really feels like that, you know. And then you got to get everybody off the ship, and it thematically, I think it's just really well put together.
Now on the show, was the Admiral on the ship when the ship came back, or
Odama was on the Galactica?
Yeah, because that's kind of the weird thing with ours.
I think was he? Yeah,
pretty sure he was.
Yeah, because then they jump into the atmosphere and came and got everybody. I want to go rent it.
Yeah, let's go. Because I was the Admiral at this point, because I forget, so many people had died and been executed at this point. I was the Admiral, and I'm on New Caprica. So I never was actually on the ship, because I was always on New Caprica, and then I never went back on New Caprica to set it off.
That's
so
right.
As the Admiral, I was never on the ship.
But you still made the decision.
Cody kind of helped push me to that, which was kind of interesting with his gameplay, because he was basically at the point where I'm ready to go. I think the morale is where it needs to be, because the additional win counter for him was the morale had to be at a certain level. So he was pretty much ready to say, well, let's go. And it was late. And I was like, yeah, sure, let's launch.
Yeah, I just found his card that he had. His was called Guide Them to Destiny, which is you win the game if the humans have won and population and morale values are within two of each other. So he had to, throughout the game, try to
keep
an eye on population and morale. He didn't care so much so he was interested in jumping the ship early and all that kind of stuff, as long as he could guarantee that the morale was lowering as well. And I think he was real close.
He was real close.
I think that if one more civilian ship had gotten evacuated, then I think that
because we lost by population minus one is
yeah
or hit zero with one. So.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I think it's really cool. The components are cool. The theme is expertly done as always. I think it is a game that if you're, it takes a while to get to learn. And I think multiple plays will help to make this even better, because if you, I found that I was looking at the rule book almost, I had it in my hand almost the entire game and was constantly looking things up. Now, I'm not one, Lloyd is actually really good at being able to take a rule book and sort of devour it and then be able to spit it back out. I'm not real good at that. And so, I usually learn by playing and learn by doing, but you know, so I had the rule book with me a lot. So I think multiple plays would really help this. So if you're not in a situation where you're going to be able to play it multiple times, then that might give you a little bit of pause there. But let's go ahead and just launch into our rating for this one. Lloyd, Battlestar Galactica, Pegasus Expansion, buy, try, or deny.
Especially if you own the base game, which
oh yeah,
make,
that's a given. We're assuming that you own the base game. Yeah,
I want to buy the expansion, not the base. A buy, totally a buy.
Yeah, definitely a buy. If you've got the base Battlestar Galactica game, which you'd have to have anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as long as you got the people to play it, definitely it really adds a great aspect to the game.
Yep, I agree. It's a buy, and if especially the fact that you can sort of modularize it and you don't have to use all the parts to it, that increases replayability. Although I would probably recommend playing with all of it. I think that
and you really do get a lot. I mean, that's the biggest thing. You're putting that much money down. You want to feel like you're getting something.
Yep, and yeah, you definitely are. So there's Battlestar Galactica, the Pegasus expansion. Well, that just about wraps up episode 28 of Game On with Cody and John, and kind of a bittersweet one because we miss Cody.
We do miss Cody.
I miss that guy.
But he's going to be coming back a man.
He'll be, oh my.
A rites of passage.
A rites of passage.
Definitely
a little Cody grew up.
A married guy. He'll have a little ring on his finger there, and so we'll be looking forward to seeing him back. But in the meantime, I've got lots of other stuff to tell you here as we close. Be sure to check out the Pulp Gamer Media Network, of which Game On with Cody and John is a proud member. And you can check out lots of other great gaming podcasts at pulpgamer.com.
And be sure to check out our website, gameonpodcast.com.
And on that website, there is that donation button. You know, anything that you can offer certainly help us out. And
yeah, we're not going to harp on money too much.
Yeah,
but,
not too much.
I've donated $300. I'll come on and say it.
I don't think it went through. Please send again.
I must have hit the wrong button.
It said insufficient funds, I believe.
Oh, that's probably what it was.
Yeah, but just a simple PayPal donation can take care of that, and certainly would greatly be appreciated.
Yeah, it helps to kind of keep things rolling here on Game On. We also want to tell you about our Board Game Geek Guild. This is separate from our Game On Podcast website, but it's a place where we've got some forums and a image gallery and some other things. So got some discussions going on there, and I've had some folks that have posted, at least one guy, well, me and one other guy, have posted pictures from Gen Con and some from some other conventions, so you can go check out those too. So BoardGameGeek.com, probably the best source online for board game information.
And as we mentioned earlier, please send all your emails to us. We do like to read them. We don't necessarily get to read them all online, but we definitely like to read them and get your input and everything else. So make sure you send that to the Game On Inbox at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Yep. And so we want to invite you to join us in 2 weeks where Cody will be back with us, and I think these guys probably won't. So I want to thank Lloyd.
I thought we were here for the rest of the
You only signed a one-show contract, right? Right?
I got a new agent.
I tell you what. But I hope you guys enjoyed being a part of the show.
It has been an honor, sir.
An honor.
Okay, cool.
Pleasure.
And maybe you'd like to come back and...
Oh. Anytime, okay. Especially if the fans want us.
Unless we get a whole bunch of emails just saying these guys suck, but I doubt it.
Stick with Cody. Yeah, no, don't say those things.
You're a couple of simple gamers, you know, mouth breathers.
We have to have a what the L moment with single L.
Exactly, a new segment there. We really appreciate you guys coming on and being guest hosts for this episode. And so join us in 2 weeks, and we're going to be reviewing Arcane Legions, that new miniatures game from Wells Expeditions. Be talking about a lot of other stuff. Got some surprises in store. So until then,
Game On.
What wonderful
here we are at a special Game On presentation of Cody and Kaylin's wedding.
A once in a lifetime.
I know. I don't think you're going to find this on any other episodes of the show.
This is the best dressed we've looked. for our radio audience.
Yeah, yeah. So here we are at Cody and Kaylin's wedding reception, and they've done it. They've done the deed. Well, they've gotten married.
Wow. PG-13.
Sorry, yeah. Family show. What did you guys think of the wedding?
I thought it went well.
Okay. And
I'd give it a bye.
why don't you tell the listeners where you're going to be going on your honeymoon and what kind of stuff you'll be doing?
Well, we're going to Disney World for the honeymoon, and we're going to be doing all sorts of Disney-type stuff. And riding rides, doing all that good stuff.
Yeah.
So one thing that we've probably mentioned a little bit on the show is the fact that both you and Kaylin are gamers.
Yep.
And so how will you be integrating gaming into your marriage? And is gaming a good thing for a successful marriage? I'll ask Kaylin.
Well, we've got the game room all set up in our apartment. We've got our 4th edition D&D game that's going on right now. And then I'll be running a Pathfinder game. We just game a lot together too. So
gaming is fun.
Yeah.
Can I play in your Pathfinder game?
Yes.
Awesome. All right. Well, that's cool. Well, I guess I wish you guys the best, and I hopefully took care of the show while you were gone. And
we'll see. I'll listen to it on the plane.
Okay. Good. All right. Well, and I guess that's all from Cody and Kaylin's wedding. Congratulations, guys.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.